Tervetuloa väitöstilaisuuteen, jossa tarkastetaan diplomi-insinööri Jussi Raskun väitöskirja otsikoltaan Toward Automatic Customization of Vehicle Routing Systems. Vastaväittäjänä toimii professori Luca Di Caspero Udinen yliopistosta Italiasta. Informaatioteknologian tiedekunnan määräämänä kustoksena julistan väitöstilaisuuden alkaneeksi.
Arvoisa kustos, kunnioitettu vastaväittäjä, hyvät kuulijat. Maailma pienenee, etäisyydet eivät. Voit esimerkiksi ostaa tuotteen verkkokaupasta toiselta puolta maailmaa ja joidenkin viikkojen kuluttua se lähes taianomaisesti ilmestyy kotiovellesi. Tästä näennäisestä helppuudesta huolimatta paketin kulkeva matka on pitkä ja haastava. Se kulkee läpi monimutkaisen logistiikkaketjun, jossa eri toimijat huolehtivat oman osuutensa paketin kuljettamisesta kohti sen määränpäätä. Ketun tehokkuuden kannalta on tärkeää, että kuljetustoiminta on suunniteltu ja järjestetty tehokkaalla tavalla. Uusia haasteita kuljetustoimijoille aiheuttavat kiivas kilpailu, ilmastonmuutoksen torjunta ja asiakkaiden alati kasvavat odotukset. Lisäksi on ennustettu, että kotiinkuljetusten määrä kasvaa merkittävästi vuoteen 2030 mennessä. Samanaikaisesti alati kehittyvä tietoliikenne ja paikannustekniikka mahdollistaa entistä nopeamman reagoinnin operatiivisessa toiminnassa tapahtuviin muutoksiin. Ilman logistiikan ohjaukseen ja suunnitteluun tarkoitettuja tietojärjestelmiä nopeasti muuttuvan toimialan hallinta olisi äärimmäisen haastavaa, ellei peräti mahdotonta. Suomen kuljetustoimintaa leimaa tiekuljetusten suuri osuus suhteessa muihin kuljetusmuotoihin. Tämä erityispiirre on seurausta maamme suurista maantieteellisistä etäisyyksistä ja alhaisesta väestön tiheydestä. Siksi etenkin täällä Suomessa tiekuljetusten suunnittelu ja niiden tehokkuus on erityisen tärkeää. Tiekuljetukset voidaan edelleen karkeasti jakaa runkokuljetuksiin, erikoiskuljetuksiin sekä jakelu- ja keräilykuljetuksiin. Näistä väitöstutkimuksessani keskityin jakelu- ja keräilykuljetuksiin ja erityisesti niiden suunnitteluun käytettyihin ohjelmistoihin. Tyypillisiä suunniteltavia kuljetustehtäviä ovat postinjakelu, paketti- ja koulukuljetukset, kotihoitajien toiminnanohjaus sekä jätehuollon järjestäminen. Ohjelmistoilla tehtävällä kuljetusreittien optimoinnilla voidaan merkittävästi tehostaa henkilö- ja tavaralogistiikan toimintaa. Kirjallisuuden mukaan tyypillinen optimoinnilla saavutettu säästö on 5–20% verrattuna käsin tehtävään suunnitteluun. Samalla tämä tarkoittaa, että autot tupruttavat 5–20% vähemmän sääpäästöjä, aiheuttavat vähemmän ruuhkia ja niin edelleen. Lisäksi etuna on, että suunnittelu nopeutuu, suunnitelmien laatu kasvaa ja saadaan entistä paremmin tukemaan kuljetusyritysten prosesseja. Myös uudet innovatiiviset arvoketjut, kuten ne, jotka perustuvat jakamis- ja alustatalouteen, tarvitsevat usein tuekseen tehokasta kuljetusten koordinointia. Logistiikan merkittävä rooli nykyaikaisen yhteiskunnan toiminnan mahdollistajana onkin tehnyt ajoneuvojen reitityksestä tärkeän optimoinnin sovelluksen. Kuljetusliiketoiminnan alati kasvavat haasteet huomioiden ei ole yllättävää, että kiinnostus kuljetusten optimointijärjestelmiä kohtaan on kasvanut tasaisesti. Tätä tieteenalaa, jonka alle kuljetusten suunnittelutehtävien tutkimuskin kuuluu, sanotaan operaatiotutkimukseksi. Me operaatiotutkijat kehitämme matemaattisia malleja liikkeenjohdon, teollisuuden ja julkisen hallinnon päätöksenteon tueksi, ja myös suunnittelemme ja tuotamme niiden ratkaisemiseen tarkoitettuja algoritmeja. Kuljetusten suunnittelun osalta tunnettuja operaatiotutkimusalan aiheita ovat kauppamatkustajan ongelma, laitoksen sijoittelutehtävä ja tämän tutkimuksen keskiössä oleva ajoneuvojen reitytystehtävä, englanniksi Vehicle Routing Problem, lyhennettynä VRP. Aihetta on tutkittu laajasti 60-luvulta lähtien. Siinä tehtävänantona on suunnitella reitit, jotka mahdollisimman tehokkaasti palvelevat joukon toimituksia noudattavia asiakkaita. Yleensä reitit suunnitellaan varikolta lähteville ja sinne lopulta palaaville ajoneuvoille. Kapasiteettirajoitetussa tapauksessa asiakaskohtaiset toimitukset voivat olla eri kokoisia, eikä ajoneuvojen kapasiteettia saa ylittää. Lisäksi tavallisesti edellytetään, että kunkin asiakkaan luona vierailee ainoastaan yksi ajoneuvo. Tehtävä on mallinnettavissa matemaattisesti kombinatorisena optimointiongelmana, jolloin paras ratkaisu voidaan löytää käyttämällä kokonaislukuoptimointia. Mahdollisten ratkaisuiden lukumäärä kasvaa kuitenkin nopeasti tehtävän koon, eli asiakkaiden määrän kasvaessa. Siksi parhaimman, eli optimaalisen ratkaisun löytäminen ei läheskään aina ole mahdollista. Reaalimaailman kuljetustehtävien ratkaisemisessa tutkijat ja ohjelmistotoimittajat turvautuvatkin pääasiassa erilaisiin heuristiikoihin. Heuristiikat ovat nyrkkisääntöjä tai reseptejä ratkaisuuden rakentamiseksi, niiden parantamiseksi ja purkamiseksi. Niitä yhdistelemällä algoritmit pystyvät tuottamaan nopeasti hyvälaatuisia ratkaisuja myös suurempiin ja monimutkaisempiin tehtäviin. Vaikka näiden menetelmien tuottamien ratkaisuiden optimaalisuutta ei voida taata, ne ovat lähes aina riittävän hyviä käytännön kuljetustehtävien tarpeisiin. Heuristisen lähestymistavan käyttökelpoisuutta heijastelee myös kirjallisuudessa esiteltyjen heuristiikkojen ja metaheuristiikkojen suuri määrä. Tilannetta korostaa erilaisten kuljetustehtävien kirjo, joiden vuoksi algoritmeja suunniteltaessa on huomioitava suuri määrä erilaisia rajoitteita ja tavoitteita. Käytännön algoritmien suorituskykyvertailut empiirisesti vahvistavat, että Wolpertin ja McReadyn ilmaisia lounaita ei ole olemassa optimoinnissakaan. Teoreema pätee myös kuljetusten optimointialgoritmeille. Tämä teoreema itsessään on melko tekninen ja teoreettinen, mutta sen sanoma voidaan tiivistää seuraavasti. Ei ole olemassa yksittäistä algoritmia, joka olisi paras yli kaikkien mahdollisien tehtävien. Kannattaa silti huomata, että teoreema ei kiellä algoritmien välisiä käytännön suorituskykyeroja. Tietyn tehtävän ratkaisemiseen luultavasti on olemassa paras yksittäinen algoritmi. Näin siksi, että tehtävien ominaispiirteet eivät ole tasaisesti jakautuneita, vaan samasta lähteestä peräisin olevat tehtävät muistuttavat paljon toisiaan. Täten oikealla algoritmien valinnalla on hyvinkin paljon merkitystä. Sen sijaan, että olisin työssäni pyrkinyt kehittämään uuden algoritmin alati kasvavien kuljetusten optimointimenetelmien joukkoon, päätin tutkimuksessani keskittyä jo olemassa oleviin menetelmiin ja niiden tehokkaampaan hyödyntämiseen. Väitöskirjaa edeltävissä työtehtävissä olin päässyt tutustumaan konenäköön ja koneoppimiseen, joten ensimmäiseen tutkimussuunnitelmaan päätyi näiden kahden aiheen, eli ajoneuvojen reititystehtävän ja koneoppimisen yhdistäminen. Tutkimukseni keskeisenä tavoitteena oli tällä yhdistelmällä tehdä viimeisimmän tutkimustiedon hyödyntämisestä helpompaa ja halvempaa kuljetusten optimointijärjestelmiä rakennettaessa. Näin asiantuntijoiden aikaa vapautuu käyttöönottohankkeiden kannalta olennaisempien prosessi- ja tiedonhallintakysymysten ratkomiseen. Tämä tarve oli käynyt selväksi aiemmin Jyväskylän yliopistolla tekemämme soveltavan tutkimuksen kokemuksesta. Tutkijakollegani Tuukka Purasen vuonna 2011 esittelemä tutkimus tähtäisi ratkaisemaan tätä ongelmaa modernin ohjelmistosuunnittelun keinoin. Väitöskirjassaan hän esitteli kustannustehokkaan ohjelmistoarkkitehtuurin kuljetusten optimointijärjestelmien käsintehtävän räätälöintiin. Tuukan työ tarjosikin tutkimukselleni tukevan perustan. Yhdessä väitöskirjamme muodostavat kokonaisuuden, jossa ohjelmistotekniikan ja kuljetusten optimoinnin yhteensovittamista on tutkittu ennennäkemättömässä laajuudessa. Tätä yhdistelmää on sen suuresta käytännön merkittävyydestä huolimatta tutkittu yllättävän vähän. Etenkin jos huomioimme tietotekniikan viime vuosikymmenten huiman kehityksen, jonka ansiosta voimme mallintaa ja ratkaista entistä suurempia ja monimutkaisempia tehtäviä. Tietokoneista ja ohjelmistoista onkin tullut korvaamattomia tutkimuksen työkaluja, joita ilman nykyisen kaltainen operaatiotutkimus ei olisi mahdollista. Tämä sama kehitys on myös koneoppimisen ja tekoälyn kasvaneen merkityksen taustalla. Lähestymistavat, joiden käyttö vielä muutama vuosikymmen sitten ei olisi ollut mahdollista, datan määrän ja laskentatehon rajallisuuden vuoksi, ovatkin äkkiä tulleet käyttökelpoisiksi. Ja monesti osoittautuneet ylivoimaisiksi verrattuna aiempiin tekniikoihin. Kun tarkastelemme, mistä koneoppimisessa pohjimmiltaan on kyse, sen soveltamiseen liittyvien solmien aukeamisesta laskentatehon kasvaessa tulee selviä. Koneoppimisen keskiössä ovat algoritmit, jotka osaavat rakentaa mallin ilmiöstä käyttäen ainoastaan siitä mitattua tietoa. Täten, mitä enemmän laskentatehoa ja tallennuskapasiteettia, sitä enemmän dataa voimme kerätä ja käyttää. Ja siten, sitä monimutkaisempia malleja voimme sovittaa. Tyypillisiä koneoppimistehtäviä ovat säätöarvon ennustaminen regression avulla, mittaustulosten luokittelu tunnettuihin tai ennalta tuntemattomiin ryhmiin, sekä havainnointiin liittyvät tunnistustehtävät, kuten konenäkö tai puheen tunnistus. Koneoppimisella sovitettu malli on kuitenkin vain niin hyvä kuin sen opettamiseen käytetty aineisto sallii. Siksi aineiston käsittely, kuten muuttujien valinta, poikkeamien tunnistaminen ja dimension pienennys ovat äärimmäisen tärkeitä tekniikoita koneoppimista käytettäessä. Eräs tutkimusaihe, jossa koneoppimisella on kasvava rooli, on metaoptimointi, eli optimointimenetelmien optimointi. Optimointimenetelmän suorituskyky riippuu paljon siitä, millaista tehtävää sillä yritetään ratkaista ja miten sen parametrit, kuten vaikkapa geneettisen algoritmin mutaatiotodennäköisyys, on asetettu. Oikean optimointimenetelmän valinta ja sen parametrien asettaminen voidaankin nähdä erillisenä optimointiongelmana. Kannattaa silti huomata, että suunnittelutehtävän ratkaisemisen kannalta tavoite ei ole muuttunut. Edelleen etsitään mahdollisimman korkealaatuisia kuljetussuunnitelmia, mutta perinteisen algoritmikehityksen sijaan suorituskykyä pyritäänkin nyt parantamaan koneoppimisen avulla. Käytännössä sitä käytetään tunnistamaan ja hyödyntämään säännönmukaisuuksia algoritmien suorituskykyvaihtelussa. Valitsemani lähestymistavan vuoksi kuljetustehtävien luonteen ymmärtäminen ja systemaattinen analysointi ovat olleet tärkeitä tutkimusaiheita työssäni. 3 kokoomaväitöskirjani kaikkiaan 6 julkaisusta keskityimme kuljetusten suunnittelutehtävien, niiden hakuavaruuksien ja niiden ratkaisemiseen käytettyjen heuristiikkojen ominaisuuksiin. Toteutin muun muassa visualisointitekniikan, jonka avulla algoritmien käyttäytymistä voidaan tarkkailla. Piirteitystavan, jolla ajoneuvon reititystehtävälle voidaan laskea sen ominaisuuksia kuvaavia tunnuslukuja, sekä 15 klassista algoritmia, joiden toimintaa analysoin perinpohjaisesti. Nämä tulokset tuovat meille lisää tietoa ajoneuvojen reititystehtävistä ja niiden ratkaisemiseen käytettyjen optimointialgoritmien ominaisuuksista. Samalla tutkimukseni ottaa osaa tuoreeseen keskusteluun tulosten toistettavuudesta ja tieteen avoimuudesta. Julkaisut sisältävät aiempien tulosten uusittavuustarkastelua, ja osa kehittämistäni ohjelmistoista on julkaistu avoimen lähdekoodin lisenssillä. Esimerkkinä klassisia reitinoptimointialgoritmeja toteuttava Python-kirjasto VeriPy, joka on ladattavissa GitHub-palvelusta. Näiden kontribuutioiden lisäksi yhdessä julkaisuista tunnistimme ja kuvasimme ne kuljetusten optimointijärjestelmän kohteet, joita mukauttamalla räätälöintiä tehdään. Tutkimukseni edetessä tunnistetut kohteet osoittautuvat kiinnostaviksi myös räätälöinnin automatisoinnin näkökulmasta. Lopulta 2 viimeisimmässä julkaisussa yhdistimme nämä eri tutkimukselliset osa-alueet. Toisessa käytämme tehtävien ominaispiirteitä ennustamaan parhaan klassisen ratkaisualgoritmin, ja toisessa esittelemme laajan parametrien automaattista konfigurointia käsittelevän laskennallisen tutkimuksen. Yhdessä väitöskirjani julkaisut osoittavat, että metaoptimointi pystyy olennaisesti parantamaan olemassa olevien kuljetusten optimointialgoritmien suorituskykyä ja itsesäätyvyyttä. Palataan vielä kuljetusten optimointijärjestelmiin, jossa nykytilanne edellyttää merkittävän määrän räätälöintiä, aina kun tekniikkaa mukautetaan toisiin uusiin tosielämän reitystehtäviin. Silloin tutkijat ja järjestelmien toimittajat joutuvat tasapainoilemaan yleiskäyttöisyyden ja erillisratkaisuuden välillä. Yleiskäyttöiset ratkaisut ovat joustavampia, mutta usein suorituskyvyltä heikompia. Erillisratkaisut taas sopivat paremmin kohteena olevaan käyttötarkoitukseen, mutta niiden kehittäminen, ylläpito, räätälöinti ja käytön tuki on käytännössä erittäin kallista. Operaatiotutkijan näkökulmasta kriittinen osa tätä käsin tehtävää työtä on sopivan optimointialgoritmin valitseminen ja sen parametrien konfigurointi. Tämä kuitenkin edellyttää vaikeasti saavutettaa ajoneuvojen reititystehtävien, niiden ratkaisualgoritmien ja niiden ympärille rakennettujen ohjelmistojärjestelmien ymmärtämistä. Aiheen haastavuuden ja monimuotoisuuden vuoksi algoritmeja valitettavasti räätälöidään ja viritetään edelleen pääasiassa käsin. Tutkimukseni on konstruktiivisella tutkimusotteella ja kattavilla empiirisillä kokeilla pystynyt osoittamaan, että nämä tehtävät ovat suureksi osaksi automatisoitavissa ja täten siirrettävissä tietokoneen tehtäväksi. Tulokset osoittavat, miten koneoppimista voidaan käyttää löytämään ja hyödyntämään säännönmukaisuuksia algoritmien suorituskykyvaihtelussa ja millaisia hyötyjä näin toimimalla voidaan saavuttaa. Lisäksi selvitimme, mitkä kirjallisuuden esitellyt metaoptimointimenetelmät soveltuvat parhaiten kuljetusten optimointimenetelmien valintaan sekä niiden parametrien etsimiseen. Yhdessä tutkimani tekniikat mahdollistavat kuljetusten optimointijärjestelmien räätälöinnin ja käyttöönoton osittaisen automatisoinnin. Väitöskirjatutkimukseni suomenkielinen otsikko oli kohti kuljetusten optimointijärjestelmien automatisoitua räätälöintiä. Kohti on tässä yhteydessä tärkeä sana, sillä se tarkoittaa, että olemme vasta matkalla. Tutkimusaiheen laajuuden vuoksi keskityin väitöskirjassani lähinnä algoritmeihin ja niiden parametreihin. Sivusimme kyllä myös tehtävien automaattista muuntamista optimointiohjelmiston edellyttämään muotoon, mutta tätä tärkeää aihetta tulee jatkossa tutkia lisää. Etenkin, koska kokemus on osoittanut, että merkittävä osuus kuljetusten optimointijärjestelmien käyttöönottotyöstä kuluu aineiston laadun ja sen oikean muodon varmistamiseen. Tutkimukseni antaa silti esimerkkejä siitä, miten ajojärjestelijöiden käyttöön saadaan entistä tehokkaampia työkaluja. Metaoptimoinnilla voidaan varmistua siitä, että käytettävissä on aina sopiva ja oikein viritetty kuljetusten optimointimenetelmä. Lähestymistapa mahdollistaa kerättyjen tietomassojen hyödyntämisen, mikä tekee kuljetusten optimointiohjelmistoista helpompia käyttää ja halvempia räätälöidä eri käyttötarkoituksia. Parhaimmillaan voidaan saavuttaa erillisratkaisun suorituskyky, mutta yleiskäyttöisen arkkitehtuurin joustavuus. Tekoälyn ja ihmisen yhteistyönä saadaan jälleen kerran syntymään kokonaisuuden kannalta optimaalisia lopputuloksia. May I ask you, Professor De Gasperi, as the opponent appointed by the faculty to present the comments to my thesis that you see justifiable. Sorry.
Distinguished Kostas, dear candidate, ladies and gentlemen, it's my honor and pleasure to be here today to discuss this academic dissertation, and I thank the Kostas and the candidate for inviting me. What is essential is invisible to the eye. And this is a saying by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry in his famous novel, The Little Prince. And this is particularly true when something has become so essential that you don't notice it anymore unless you took a different point of view on it. Indeed, coming here by plane and looking at the terrain from above, I had the opportunity to contemplate how transportation, either of people or goods, permeates our geographical and societal landscape. Highways, railways, airports, intermodal centers, but also streets in the city and bike paths have become a common infrastructure, and we don't notice them anymore. Also, the vehicles moving on the infrastructure on our behalf are almost taken for granted in our consideration regarding the satisfaction of our needs, unless you are stuck in the traffic or your parcel delivery is late. In essence, transportation and logistics, more in general, is an essential asset for our lives and for the modern society. And being so essential, it has become almost transparent to us. However, as the candidate clearly stated in his lecture precursoria, we still need to consider it. In fact, this is crucial that such an asset will be managed as much effectively as possible. It is a matter not only of cost savings, but more and more significantly also of diminishing the impact of transportation effects with respect to its contribution to the climate challenge. And since vehicles are currently conducted by persons, another relevant aspect that can be impacted by an inefficient logistics management is increasing the job quality of drivers. How to deal with such issues is the general question that the candidate was trying to answer. Computer scientists, like myself, who generally have a laziness trait, will try to tackle the problems writing some automatic tool, ranging from a simple program to a more comprehensive system that will solve the problem on their behalf. This is actually what it happened during the years. Computer science and operational researchers translated transportation problems into a family of mathematical models since the early 60s that were fed into a computer for their solution. Unfortunately, though, the problem has been proven to be a difficult one, also from the theoretical point of view. Of course, this does not mean that it cannot be solved, but that according to the current state of our knowledge, it is likely that logistics problem of practical sites, say hundreds of deliveries, might require months of computing time, if not years, for being optimally solved. On the other hand, pragmatically, the researchers and practitioners still try to find high-quality approximate solutions to these kind of problems, and over the years have proposed several solution methods. However, that's another unfortunate theoretical matter, as recalled by the candidate in his lecture precursoria, there is no free lunch. These solution methods are not guaranteed to work equally well on all instances of the problem they are faced, but they might be just adequate for problems with some structure. Also, some of the methods can be tuned by switching and moving some control knobs, called parameters, which make them more adequate to the problem at hand. The fact is that we do not know in advance which are the features that are related to the efficiency of these methods, and we would like to discover them. In general, this feature discovering task and algorithm tuning and selection implies a long and tedious experimentation, which makes this analysis task impractical outside the university intramania. However, computer scientists' laziness comes to the rescue also in this case. Why don't delegate a computer to perform this tedious task on our behalf? This raises the problem at a more abstract level, which might be called meta-optimization. This is actually the more specific research question that the candidate is trying to address in his dissertation. Among the different ways to tackle such a meta-optimization problem, one possibility is to let the computer learn on our behalf the expertise that is needed to make the selection. Indeed, this is a concrete idea behind the candidate's thesis. Essentially, he conceived a comprehensive system in which the selection and the adaptation of these solution methods is automatically discovered. The question that we will debate in this discussion will again be, is there a free lunch now? Which will raise the issue at the level of meta-optimization. In other words, my will is to explore, together with the candidate, the potential impact and limitation of his approach. Okay. So I proceed starting from the very general questions and moving toward more specific ones. And my first question is about the motivation of your study. So which were your main motivation for this study and how the research question behind your work emerge, and comprehensively, how do you choose this topic and the methods you applied for your thesis?
I think also I have to go way back when I arrived to the group on computational logistics in this very building in 2009. The research group had already ongoing projects regarding transportation and route optimization. And from those experiences, we found out that the existing solutions do not scale. That is, you always needed the operations researcher to make the customization and adapt the solutions. And we started thinking that if there would be a way to make this approach more scalable, so that it could be deployed to a wider number of transportation companies, also the smaller ones that don't have extensive resources to purchase this kind of large systems that are specially customized for their needs by expensive operations researchers. In my previous work, I had been working with machine vision, but also with machine learning. And with these tools in my hand, I started seeing opportunities how to combine machine learning and operations research. And then I had the opportunity to visit Vienna, and I met my second supervisor, Nusret Müslü, and together with him we devised the plan that was the first this kind of concrete step towards the goal of meta-optimization of vehicle routing systems, and we decided to concentrate on automatic algorithm configuration. And as the time went on, we found new opportunities to apply these methods and improve how the automation of the customization can be done.
Okay, so it's very interesting, and also the flow seems a very sound flow. So from the ground of your knowledge, you become to a different topic, and you try to have an interdisciplinary approach to the problem itself, which is extremely valuable. Another general question is about what do you think are the most significant contribution of your research to the field of study, or, in other words, if you can highlight the original and novel aspects of your work.
I think one has to consider both sides or both audiences for my thesis. On the other side, there is the academic audience who is researching the vehicle routing problems. And as I said in my lecture, there's new algorithms are being constantly proposed and evaluated. But still, when doing these algorithm comparisons, they are rarely compared in a way that all the different algorithms receive the same amount of fine-tuning. And I think this is a serious problem for the reliability of such comparisons. If the operations researchers would continue to and start using these automatic algorithm configuration tools, I think it would improve the solidness of this kind of experimental work and allow even and balanced comparison of different methods. Also, describing these problems by using feature extraction and visualizations and analysis of the properties of the algorithms, I think increase our understanding of this interesting and difficult combinatorical problem. On the other side, there's the providers of these vehicle routing systems who are targeting the industry and the transportation companies. And I think there the major contribution of my work is the framework or workflow, how such automated customization may be done. Of course, because I'm an operations researcher myself, it made more sense to concentrate on the solver component, on solving these problems. But of course, we also made some contributions regarding the data integration and interpretation of the results. So those, I think, are the main contributions. Understanding the problems better, advocating this kind of good experimental research on vehicle routing problems, and then on the industry side, the idea and the proof of concepts for automating the customization workflow.
Okay, so coming to the automatization workflow, what do you think, which components do you think that are mandatory for such a workflow, and how can be integrated?
Do you mean from the systems point of view, or for the company?
Okay, if you can elaborate on both viewpoints.
Okay, so from the systems point of view, I think the system has to be built using good software engineering methods. So that means there's encapsulation, good separation of concerns, that different functions are easily separated, because that means that by combining them on a novel ways, you can do the customization already. And that is the work I referred to in my lectio from Tuukka Puranen, who kind of paved the way for my research. So when you have all these components, the solver and all the supporting components, like the geographical information system that can provide the shortest path calculations and the map services, and then you have the data modules that take the input and produce the output. Perhaps there can be telemetry models that follow the vehicles as they drive their routes in the network. So when you have all those and they have been built using, as I said, good software engineering practices, they always leave some extra room to derive and put them together in a novel ways, or derive some functionality and extend that functionality. And that are those transformations that we recognized in my thesis, where this kind of customization work is happening at the kind of interface between these different modules. From the systems provider point of view, I think you need good computer scientists and good software engineers that build such a solutions and consider, kind of look forward and see forward, can predict which kind of changes are necessary to meet the future, the current demands of the current customers, but also the possible future demands of future customers. If we look at the literature on vehicle routing problem, there's this kind of gap or separation between these kind of specialized solutions for specific problems and then generic models, generic solvers. Of course, there's a trend towards that kind of solutions, but this kind of learning that are capable of learning from data and learning from previous solution attempts are quite novel.
Okay, and from the customer point of view, how will the customer fit in this workflow?
Yeah, it's a good point of view, because customer is of course always the key when you consider the real applications of any new technology. I think using a traditional vehicle routing system requires quite a lot of expertise. Sometimes the different parameters and the algorithms are exposed as they are to the end user. And the end user is expertise of his field. And his field is dispatching and the transportation operations. not the computer science part. And it is a hopeless idea to hope that they would be also operations researchers that could pick and choose the right algorithms, set the right parameters. Instead, what I propose in my PhD dissertation is that those tasks are better left for the computer, because the computer can try thousands, perhaps tens of thousands different configurations in seconds, something that would take years perhaps time for the dispatcher. So I think it's really important to deploy this kind of technology to make the systems easier to use and cheaper to deploy.
Yeah, that's very interesting, and I agree with your point of view. What actually about the feedback of the customer? So do you think that you can, in such a in the system you conceive, so the overall architecture or the overall system you have in mind and you are attempting, or you actually partially implemented in your thesis, how can you do you think about customers' feedback and how to exploit it to get better plans or to improve the workflow itself?
That's a really relevant question, because of course not all of these techniques have been battle tested in the hands of the end users, but our experience has been that if you expose those implementation algorithmic details to the end user, they become very, very confused. And they cannot. The problem is that this kind of automatic fine-tuning technology is a kind of unknown to them. So they cannot even ask that if you could implement meta-optimization in our system. Instead, to their providers, the requests come in a form of make it easier to use, or more powerful to use, instead of explicitly asking for specific requests. So we have to kind of interpret the feedback from the users and try to come up with such solutions that make their life easier.
So in this view, the role of a consultant or an intermediate human figure between the user and the system is still needed.
Yes, in many cases. Of course, there are some transportation tasks or operations that are quite standard. So perhaps those are where you can leave it all to the automation. But in this kind of special transportation needs, still the consultant has to be kind of who will explain the get the understanding what is important for the transportation operations, what are the constraints there, what are the soft constraints that can be broken, what are the hard constraints that you have to follow to the letter. And just gathering all the necessary information, because it sometimes might be that this information hasn't been explicitly written down before the consultant comes and starts to explore how the transportation operations could be digitalized. I think the role of consultant is important in some cases, but if we could all automate everything for small number of standard cases and give better tools also for the consultant, so that he doesn't need to worry about the parameters or algorithm selection, I think that would save a lot of trouble and allow the consultant to concentrate on understanding the problem and helping the transportation operators with the concerns, with the data quality and data integration.
I agree completely with your view, and yeah, which is really something valuable both for the end customer, but also for this intermediate figure. I think we can slightly move to the actual contributions of the single papers. So let's start from the first. So can you comment on which are the major contribution of this work, which will be about indeed the conceptual model itself? And why do you choose as the first one?
Yeah, in fact, if we consider the timeline, this is not the first paper, but I think it was still quite early in my research, and we decided that, okay, perhaps we should document these ideas that are kind of floating around and try to form a coherent view on how such an automated customization could be put together. And then we made this kind of concentrated effort on specific use cases, that is the transformations between the models, from the literature to find different kind of techniques that had been proposed that could be used to automate that specific customization step or customization phase. And the main contributions, I think, are the actual framework itself, how the modules are separated and which kind of transformations happened. And also, we provided some proofs of concept already for the algorithm part. So how the automatic algorithm configuration of real-world inspired problem instances, which kind of improvements it could bring to the resulting solution quality. And when I speak solution quality, I mean the quality of the resulting plans, transportation plans. Also with Antoine Kalba, who me and Tuukka supervised his master's thesis, we developed this automatic data integration proof of concept or prototype. And also those ideas were included in this paper. Of course, more work is needed, but I think the preliminary results were really promising.
And in hindsight, are there something that is missing? So this is one of your earliest, anyway, papers, or mid PhD career papers. Are there some parts that you would do differently, or have you ever thought about that?
Interesting question. I think it has held quite well. The ideas that we put down wrote down in 2014, I think, are still quite valid, and we haven't need to touch them too much. Of course, we have mostly considered this kind of forward transformations. So from the input data to the solver level, only really, as I said, these kind of concentrated literature reviews have been made for the trip back. So after the algorithms have done their job and you get the solution in the form of the solver, how is that interpreted back to the format that is readily usable for the end customer, the transportation company? I think that is still something that would need extra work.
So in this preliminary work, but also in the other ones, you are, some of the other ones, you are dealing with machine learning. So nowadays there is a sort of hype on say explainability of the results, which maybe is more general than just what you get here. But can you comment a bit about to which explainability level the techniques you used are working, or how much they are explainable?
Yeah. I think it's an important topic because, of course, even though as humans cannot always explain why we do the decisions we do, it is important to kind of understand why the machine does what the machine does to form this kind of trust with the machine. I think this latest discussion is connected to the rise of deep neural networks that are really, really, really powerful models that have perhaps millions of parameters that are capable of modeling many different kind of phenomena. The downside, of course, is that when you have such extensive models, they are really hard to reason about. And the methods I used in my PhD are perhaps generation older, so there are this kind of more classical machine learning methods that, of course, not all of those are explainable, but there are some methods that are easier to reason about. And I think, for example, I used in the third paper, in the fifth paper, I used random forests to find the most interesting features from the feature set I proposed in the third paper. And it kind of, the random forests offer this explainability about the importance of different inputs and this kind of models that can provide some kind of extra information that we understand the problem better are really valuable tools for the researcher. And I have done my best to utilize such tools whenever it has made more sense to understand the problem and not get like state-of-the-art performance.
So regarding this, and what you said, probably it's more useful to have explainable methods also because in the workflow, the consultant can learn a bit more about what are the relevant components of the problem, or what makes the problem hard probably to be solved. Do I interpret it correctly?
Yeah, that's true. And even if we consider the rise of artificial intelligence in more general sense, the book from Brynjolfsson and McAfee that they published a few years back, The Race Against the Machine, where they write that, in fact, it's not the machine that is, or the artificial intelligence that is best solution for problems. In fact, it's a combination of human and machine together that can beat the machine alone. So I think this is also the reason why explainability of these models is really important, so that if there's a need, the human operator can kind of nudge or help the AI to find the right solutions, the right direction. And methods that support that are interesting and desirable for this kind of uses. That is true.
Okay, so I think we can move to the second paper, from which we have a nice picture taken from that paper on the slides. So as before, can you just highlight what's the major? Which are the major contributions of this work?
Yeah, of course. So the problem with, or the problem, the difficulty with vehicle routing problem search spaces is that all the decisions are, or most of the decisions are binary. So you have to decide if the vehicle should visit the customer, let's say, at the Kompassi plaza first or should not. And so this is a binary decision. And in a moderate sized vehicle routing problem, there are thousands of such binary decisions. So the problem becomes that how do you reason about that kind of search space? Because there's this, sometimes the search spaces are called fitness landscapes, especially in the evolutionary computing field. And that's metaphor means that as the algorithm moves in the landscape that has hills and mountains and valleys, and the task becomes to find the lowest valley in the landscape. So, and the agent or the algorithm can see only the neighborhood of that specific point it resides in the neighborhood. And this is a useful metaphor. And as people, as we live in this three-dimensional world, we can move and understand that if we want to find the highest hill or the lowest valley, how we should proceed. And this kind of intuition can help also in designing algorithms. But because the vehicle routing problems are so complex, their search spaces are thousands and thousands of binary variables, how do you draw it? How do you reason about it? So luckily there's this technology called multidimensional scaling. And what it does is it finds this embedding or lower dimensional representation of that high dimensional space. And then we can plot it. And in that visualization, the peaks or the points are the solutions. And the red ones are those that are not feasible. That is, there's not enough room, for example, in the vehicle to fit all the packages on that specific configuration or that specific routing. The blue ones are the feasible ones. And the lowest feasible solution, that is the deepest valley, that's the optimal solution. And this gives us insight about which kind of structure the search space has. And we already can see that it's quite rugged. That means there's lots of small hills and high peaks and low valleys. Speculation that there's this big valley structure also in routing problems like traveling salesman problem, vehicle routing problem. That means that the good solutions are clustered, that they're close to each other. And this kind of observation, this kind of understanding and information can help to design better algorithms. So that was the starting point for this research. One of the main contributions of this work was also the technique that how we can prove that this is somewhat accurate description of the landscape. And then we calculated this kind of fitness landscape statistical measures that try to describe numerically this landscape. And by comparing the landscape measures of the visualization and the actual search space and showing that these correlate, you can be fairly certain that this is an accurate description of that search space. The limitation is that we can only visualize really small problems. But on the other hand, if we concentrate only on the local search, the local search is moving in the search space, just moving to the next village or to the next valley, seeing only a part of the solution at the time. Then we can visualize the world as the algorithm sees it. And again, that can be used to get a good insight on this problem. In addition, as a side product of this research, we were able to derive a formula that describes the number of solutions to these symmetric capacitated vehicle routing problems. Mm-hmm. And I haven't found, even though I dived quite deep to the history of vehicle routing problems, I haven't found any related work on this, which is kind of surprising that we don't, or the researchers haven't been interested in how large is the search space, or the exact expanse of the search space. And I think that's one really interesting contribution that should be explored more, perhaps in a future papers. But yeah, I think those are the visualization, the technique to verify that the visualization is accurate, and then the closed form formula for the number of solutions for these kind of problems are the main contributions of the second paper.
So in this paper, you tried with some example visualization, but possibly in your experimentation, you have more pictures. And could you learn something qualitatively from these pictures, meaning looking at a glance to one of those, predicting as a human how difficult the problem would be?
For example, varying. I have a random problem generator that I use to as a starting point, so that I have random problem with random this kind of vehicle routing task. And if I vary the parameters of the problem, the colors and the structure of that visualization change accordingly. So you can visually get some kind of insight that if this is a difficult or easy so easy problem for the algorithms.
So is it related also to the color? To the hard satisfaction part, or the part that is satisfiable?
If there's a, like islands that are separated,
okay,
that means that the simple local search cannot move from one island to another, and that becomes visible in some visualizations. Yes.
Okay, so I think we can proceed with the next one, which you discussed in a Doug's Tool seminar, isn't it?
It was a student operations research seminar.
Okay, which took place
in Nottingham.
In Nottingham, okay, but it's in the Doug's Tool
It was published
series.
In that
okay,
series.
It was published there. Sorry. Here you are dealing with extraction of features, right?
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell me again what do you think are the major contribution of this work, and how maybe it links also with the farther chapters or papers included in your thesis?
Yes. So as I said earlier, my background is in machine vision, or my software engineering background comes from there. And because we did machine vision quality control, and in quality control, there's again this explainability is really important, that we can guarantee that what we measure is relevant to the quality of the objects we are manufacturing. And from there, I understood already in my master's thesis the importance of features and importance of feature extraction. So with feature extraction, we mean this kind of engineering software that can describe the problems or the phenomena in some numeric values. And because machine learning always requires some kind of input, and then the quality of inputs becomes extremely important for building correct models that are usable models. But the problem is, of course, that how do we recognize good features? Many features have been proposed in the literature. For vehicle routing problems, only few articles are published, but for traveling salesman problem, there are a handful already. So my task in this paper was to make a survey, see which kind of features have been proposed, then see if something is missing, and construct the software, the machinery that can take a recruiting problem and produce those numeric values that can be then passed on the machine learning. And already in this, because only the feature extraction, it would be hard to estimate if the features are useful for just from the numeric values alone. In this paper, we also proposed clustering the different vehicle routing problem instances, that is benchmark problems that the scientists use to test their algorithms. To describe these well-known benchmark problems from the literature, and then use unsupervised machine learning, that is clustering methods, to see if there's some kind of groups of different kind of problems. And what I mean by different kind of problems, that they share some kind of structure or some kind of properties that would make it interesting to kind of see and research them together. And this idea can be used in so-called instance-specific algorithm configuration. So instead of considering all the problem instances together or considering them all separately, you first do some grouping to similar problems. And then you use algorithm configuration to find good parameter values for that specific group. And we show in this paper that, in fact, this approach can improve the solution quality even more over just considering all the problems together. So it's beneficial to do this kind of grouping, and the fact that we could do this kind of grouping already tells us that the feature values, in fact, describe something relevant of the problems. So the clustering and the instance-specific algorithm configuration together so that the large number of features are relevant to the task. The problem that we had with this paper is that we already produced almost 400 different values, numerical values for the vehicle routing of the vehicle routing problem instance, and there's this curse of dimensionality that tells that when the dimensionality of this feature space grows, the machine learning tasks become really much harder. It's harder to find good models in such high dimensional space. And that's why we need the dimension reduction to bring it down to specific levels that the machine learning algorithms can find the structure. And in this paper, we used just principal component analysis. Okay. But later on, we also considered feature selection. Because perhaps I'm going a little ahead, but the idea in feature selection is that we don't have to compute all of those 400 feature values, because we are interested in only those values that are valuable to us. We can leave out the irrelevant and redundant features. Mm-hmm. With principal component analysis, we cannot do that, because it just transforms the feature space.
Yeah, concerning indeed, however, although the feature space is transformed, if you open the black box of each cluster, or could you in principle analyze which are the common factors, or try to get some information, some insight on what. Why the given instances have been clustered together?
Yeah, in fact, there's this kind of interactive visualization online. The link can be found from the paper.
Yeah,
and it allows you, in fact, to see there's a visualizations of each of these problems. that you allows you not see the search space, but see the optimal or the best known solution for that problem, specific problem. And it allows already you to visually kind of have intuition why these problems are grouped together. And again, I think this is a valuable tool for operations researcher or algorithm developer. If he observes that, or them observes that his algorithm doesn't work very well on a specific group of problems, by observing those solutions against the best known solutions in that group, might give him insight how to tweak, how to modify his algorithm, perhaps how to combine it with some other algorithmic components that could better handle such feature that is apparent from the visual inspection.
Okay, going to the kind of clustering you used, you employed DBSCAN. Have you thought about using hierarchical clustering instead?
I'm sorry?
Have you thought about trying also with hierarchical clustering? And if not, there are some motivations about, against that?
Yeah. Well, in fact, I first used just k-means. Okay. But as you can see, the clusters are sometimes this kind of this kind of string formation, mm-hmm. and lead to the but partially due to the principal component analysis, but also for the visualization, there's been some multidimensional scaling that has been made. So DBSCAN, I think, has been quite valuable tool for for me in the past. I haven't considered, I haven't used so many hierarchical clustering algorithms before. So perhaps it would be interesting to compare this kind of different approaches, k-means and DBSCAN and some hierarchical clustering method, and see if the clusters they found have distinct properties. And this could be even tested using, for example, the instance-specific algorithm configuration to see which kind of clustering approach is most usable for that specific use.
Okay, so I think we can move on. And paper 4 is your biggest contribution to the thesis in many senses, isn't it? So at least in size, and I find it very, very valuable and really a comprehensive piece of work. Yeah, so it deserves, it's still unpublished, but it deserves really to be published, although, yeah, that it will be not so easy to find a venue or a journal for such an amount of content. But besides, indeed, that. Can you tell me, can you tell us something about the motivations of this meta survey and why you decide to implement all these classical heuristics?
Okay. The background for this work was that I already had used the algorithms from Chris Groer et al., the VRPH package in quite a few papers. The problem with that package is that those algorithms are stochastic. And stochasticity means that every time you run the algorithm, it gives a different result. And sometimes testing this kind of algorithms can be really tricky because sometimes they are, in some situations, they are not very robust. That means that you change something very little and the output changes a great deal. So to do algorithm selection, I wanted something more stable, something more robust. And from there, I wanted to use deterministic algorithms. And if we consider deterministic algorithms, our choices between exact solvers and the classical heuristics. I first considered using exact solvers, but because my background and the background of our research group, it may have been even a bigger project to consider that approach. Even though there are quite a few interesting computational studies available for that test different approaches to solving VRP exactly. Then, as I kind of rejected that because it was too much work, I considered to collect the data from the literature. So from the existing tables that have been published, if I could get the data that describes which algorithm is good for solving which algorithm. But the problem is that the practice has changed through the years, and also as many of the modern algorithms are stochastic, they are really hard to compare against each other if they are published by different authors. They have written in different programming languages. They have been run on entirely different computational hardware. The first are run on some kind of mainframes from the 60s, 70s, and then the latest ones are running in the cloud computing environments. So it becomes really hard to compare and combine this data from multiple choices. I started doing that, and in the midway, I kind of gave up because I understood that this is a fool's errand. This cannot be done. And if I do this, the results I will get from the algorithm selection will be nonsensical. So it was time for plan C. And the plan C was to implement it myself. As I said, I have software engineering background, so I thought how bad it could be. And it was quite bad, to be honest. But I did my best to, in fact, replicate the existing or the earliest algorithms for vehicle routing problem. And the problem is that only few attempts have been tried in the past, and not all of those have been entirely successful. So the question is, how can we rely on those fundamental results in the early papers if we cannot know if they really can be replicated? And this was something that I became quite interested in, that if some of these algorithms, how difficult they are to implement and how difficult it will be to replicate the results that have been published before. And I think the report is 130 or so pages long. I tried to be really accurate in describing all the different design and implementation details I had to make to replicate those results, because sometimes some details were not mentioned in the papers, so I had to do this kind of guesswork and try to reason about the algorithm, that how the original researchers have probably approached this problem, and then try different combinations. And for then or so of the 15 classical methods, I was able to replicate the results quite well. So I think it was interesting, and even though it was kind of something that does not directly contribute to the main topic of my PhD, it's just still something that I consider to be quite interesting and perhaps even important for the vehicle routing community as a whole, because now we have some kind of reference implementations that are freely available that other researchers can build on top of. And I hope this will be a valuable addition to the other open source solvers for this problem. Because I used modern programming language, Python, that has been used for, that has gained popularity among scientists for recent years, and functional programming style that makes it easier to just take the functionality that is the most relevant for the specific task that the researcher is facing. So this kind of composability, of course, because I was trying to replicate the results, was really important attribute to consider when I was designing the library. And it allowed me to reuse most of the components. And now there are some freely available implementations also for this kind of math heuristics that combine the linear programming, the exact methods, and the heuristics. So I didn't manage entirely escape the world of exact solving, but now, to conclude, we now have 15 classical implementations available for other researchers as well.
I definitely agree with you. So your contribution for having a common ground for future research is so valuable that although it's not, it could seem not central to your thesis, instead it is. So it's really, it's the basis of the work of future work for yourself or someone else.
Also, the what is included in the paper is perhaps the most extensive computational study on these classical methods that has been presented. So there was all 450 or so problem instances that have been used through the years to demonstrate the effectiveness of these approaches. And now we can see which are truly, which methods truly stand out from the rest.
And how long does it take to run all these experiments?
I don't recall the exact numbers, but luckily I had the Microsoft Azure credits at my disposal that I could just...
Yeah, but in a wall clock time, so how many days did it take?
I don't remember the exact numbers. I think it's reported somewhere in those pages.
Also, the order of magnitude were that 1 month, a few weeks.
I gave a one-hour timeout for each attempt.
Okay.
So because one of the main criteria was that the algorithm should be able to solve problems up to 1,000 points. And of course, it was difficult to estimate beforehand that if I can extrapolate that it seemed that okay, this is quite close. It might be it can solve. It might be it doesn't solve. And then after implementing that algorithm, sometimes it was that it couldn't solve it, even though I was hoping it could. But of course, I wanted still I had. Done a great deal of programming work to implement it. So I decided to put a timeout to give some kind of to balance the field, so to speak, to the more simple methods.
Yeah, and anyway, maybe we can discuss later about that. So it was just out of curiosity. It's not relevant for this examination. We are almost done, at least with going through the papers. So can we move to the paper 5? Which has been published in a conference on artificial neural networks and computational intelligence and machine learning. In this case, so this is actually what you were anticipating in your previous discussion about moving to feature selection and instead of using dimensionality reduction. So what were the experience with feature selection then? So can you summarize indeed your findings about what you did here?
Yeah. In an earlier study with with Professor Kärkkäinen, we already had explored the use of autoencoders and neural networks to recognize the interesting features by doing analysis of the feature space. In this paper number 5, we decided to use more traditional methods for feature selection and compare it against the method we proposed in the, I think it's yet unpublished paper. The idea was to find the features that are most relevant to the task of meta-learning regarding vehicle routing solvers and vehicle routing algorithms. Because, as I said earlier, if it is easy to propose new feature extractors, but calculating those features is also quite costly. So it might take also the weeks and perhaps even months if you just add in more and more feature selectors and the feature extractors. And of course, some of the algorithms are really, really fast. For problems with tens of thousands of points, the fastest methods might take only few seconds, perhaps tens of seconds, to produce solutions if they are implemented in an efficient way. So the question is that how do you balance between this? Do you some work up front to avoid the risk of selecting the wrong algorithm, or do you just calculate the methods that are really or use the feature extraction methods that are really simple, and use that limited information to do this choice of which algorithm one should use. And in this paper, by using those different algorithm selection methods, we tried to get an overall understanding which kind of features are relevant to this task. And unsurprisingly, those features that are related to this probing of the search space, that is, you use some kind of simple local search heuristic that wanders around into the valleys and into the mountains and gets some kind of understanding of the overall shape of the search space, those features seem to be really relevant also when selecting the method that one should use to solve that specific problem.
Yeah, this prompts me actually to another general methodological question. So, are the methods, or some of the methods that you developed, applicable also to guide the search? So, probably is somehow an online or faking a sort of online method for getting information and exploiting that information later in an offline fashion. To what extent some of the methods you propose can be also exploited in an online, parameter tuning task?
Yeah, that is true. And these topics are interlinked, definitely. Just to keeping the scope well constrained, in this PhD we only considered offline methods. So offline algorithm configuration, offline algorithm selection. That is, offline means that it is done before applying the algorithm into the practice. It's some kind of information that you gather before you have to use the algorithm. But there has been some research already some time on these hyper heuristics that work in this online fashion. That during their attempts to solve the problem, they gather information about the search space, And then, depending on that information, they can apply different strategies to solve that problem. But in my work, we haven't considered such methods. Of course, some of the methods, for example, genetic algorithms or similar methods, can already be considered to be somewhat learning. They kind of the information they gather from the search space, from the search, is encoded to the model that is the population. So there's a fine line between when the algorithm is just adaptive and when it can be considered to be hyperheuristic. Mm-hmm. And what is that, you know, distinction?
Yeah, I also agree that there is a no clear or fuzzy border between adaptive algorithms and hyperheuristics. And yes, I agree with your view with your what you did so to keep the scope of your thesis focused on a given kind of selection, because it would have been too broad as a thesis topic, of course. So last but not least, you have paper number 6, which is also a very comprehensive paper with sound results about the automatic configuration of solvers. So somehow a sort of conclusion of your work with respect to what were your objectives at the beginning. So I propose you to highlight the major contribution, and maybe then we will discuss a bit about some details.
Yeah. I think it was Kadioglu in 2010 who made the observation that there has been this kind of renaissance in automatic algorithm configuration. And that is true. There's perhaps 10 or so popular methods that had been proposed for tackling this problem. And now the question was, which one should use? This is kind of on the meta level. And of course, there had been some prior work where one or perhaps even two methods had been considered to automatically configure vehicle routing solvers or vehicle routing algorithms, but no comprehensive comparison of different modern state-of-the-art automatic algorithm configuration methods. And this was the research question we strive to answer, that is there something special about vehicle routing problems that should be considered when choosing the automatic algorithm configuration method, but also which kind of advantage one should expect when deploying such technology. Mm-hmm. So these were the questions, and we tried to fix those parameters about the experiments that we could. That was the size of the problem set and the timeout and so on, and vary those that we thought would be interesting. For example, how much time is given to the configuration methods to find the good parameter configuration. And by carefully analyzing the results, we could give some recommendations to the practitioners of vehicle routing problem research, which configuration algorithms they should use when they compare the novel algorithms against the existing algorithms, for example. So if, as you said, it all comes together in this last article.
So here for the experimentation, you use some benchmark set. Can you tell us how do you choose it, and how do you choose also the set of algorithm configurations methods that you included in your study?
Yeah, if I first consider the benchmark sets.
Yeah.
So there's really popular benchmarks from Christopher de Sette al from the year I was born in 1979 that has been used through the years over and over again. And that was something from the start that I thought would be an interesting, because it has been, one might even say, overused through the years. Then the second benchmark set was from Augerard from 1995, where he considered two different related problem sets. One with where the customers are clustered, so close together in this, you could imagine in a villages when scattered around the landscape, and one in when they are uniformly distributed. So there's sets A and B. And the purpose of including this set was to see that even if the problems are little bit different, but from the same source, how well does the configuration effort generalize? So of course, if you configure the solver for specific use, it might be that the advantage is still visible if you use it to relate the problems. And finally, to consider different kind of weak routing problem variants. These Christofides and Augerard sets were for capacitated vehicle routing problem. And the other set I used was for vehicle routing problem with stochastic demands. And this was to see if the decision or changing the problem variant has an effect on the proofs of the configuration algorithms. So by varying the composition and the type of the problem sets, we could see different facets of automatic algorithm configuration. Regarding the algorithm configuration methods themselves, I did a literature survey on algorithm configuration of routing solvers, including traveling salesman problem. And from there, gathered the configuration methods that had been used previously to configure vehicle routing problems. They had not been compared with each other previously, but they had been used, and I think that was, so they were tools that the operations researchers and the vehicle routing problem researchers already used. And my question, which would be the most, which one we should recommend the comparison aim to answer that question.
So and you also have a baseline, which is uniform random sampling. If I'm not wrong, in some cases it outperforms some of the tuners, isn't it?
Yeah.
How can you explain that? Have you an idea of what happened so badly to the tuners?
In some cases, especially if there was only few evaluations, so little time for the more advanced methods to explore the search space. It seemed that the uniform random sampling, the baseline method, in fact, was able to find better solutions. But this is due to what is known as the exploration versus exploitation in search. So the idea is that if one should jump to the jump around into the landscape or concentrate your search efforts on certain areas. And of course, by nature, the random search is very explorative. It jumps around the search space looking for ever better solutions, whereas most of the sophisticated methods concentrate their effort on the first area they land on. And in some cases, if the search space in the configuration space is really rugged and it has many basins of attraction, it might be that the more sophisticated methods are captured quite early in these attractors and they cannot escape those. And in these cases, it might be that, in fact, the best strategy is to be really maximally explorative. And it all boils down to the no-free-lunch theorem.
Mm-hmm. Concerning, the methods, some of them are model-based, some of them are model-free. Is there a clear, a crisp result that says one family of methods is better than the other?
There were some distinctions. For example, the CMAES, so the evolution strategy that has this kind of model for the probabilities, mm-hmm. covariant matrix adaptation, seemed to be quite good fit for those parameter search spaces where there were many numerical parameters. And for example, and on the other hand, the iterative phrase that has also solid statistical background, it has a model that it updates during the iterations, and then the race is compared using statistics that which of the configurations that are selected or generated for the race seem to show statistically significant advantage over the others. And that was good for those targets that had many this kind of binary decisions that had to be made. So there was this kind of overall recommendations and distinctions, but in fact, I think I didn't consider comparing this parametric and non-parametric models if there's any difference between those. That's a really interesting observation.
Yeah, something to deserve. I don't expect there will be a clear result, so there's no free lunch as we are discussing in this examination. But still, maybe there might be some sort of guideline you can give on depending on the structure of the problem itself. Yeah. Yes. I think we are almost over with specific questions. I would have a few, some more general questions. The first one is, can you estimate how far is your research from being used directly in daily practice?
No, not very far, I'd say. So I'm really looking forward to put these ideas into practice, and because the background for this work was to save my own effort, as you in your opening speech said that we have the laziness built into us, so kind of save my own trouble to avoid doing this laborious and tedious fine-tuning of algorithms. So it's something that I definitely will put into the good use in the future. And of course, some of the more complex and more sophisticated ideas, one has to consider always the benefit for the actual business, if it makes sense to build that. But software grows and it accumulates new features, it might be that sometimes there's a definite need for this kind of ease of use or self-adaptivity. And then I know already from few tips and tricks from my PhD dissertation that I can use. So definitely I will use these results in the future.
Yeah. And I repeat one question I did it before, but it was just on a single article. And in more general terms, if you look back to your PhD history, so from your start point to now, is there something that you would have done differently or I wouldn't say better. Yeah, that differently. It's the right time. Now that you have the knowledge what was the outcome, right?
Perhaps I should have used the VRPH just instead of implementing those classical methods, because I think it would have saved us a year or year and a half. We would have arrived to this situation earlier. But as we discussed, it has been told to me from several distinguished academics that it's a valuable contribution. So I'm still quite happy that I decided to be a little bit stubborn and went ahead and implemented. I describe myself sometimes as a time optimist, and that means that I seriously underestimate the time it takes to make things. And this time I'm quite happy that I I was a time optimist.
Yeah, you are in good company with these false estimations, these wrong estimations. Also another, say, retrospective question. Do you think that your approach, your thinking to, about the topics of your thesis has changed during the thesis, during your research, and maybe as a side effect of what you learned from the process of doing your PhD?
I think the idea is more of clarified during the process. So in the beginning, it was just when I arrived in Vienna, it was just vague idea that I should combine machine learning and vehicle routing problem. So, and I had done some literature reviewing by then which kind of approaches there are, but it was a much too wide scope for a PhD. And after concentrating on automatic algorithm configuration, it soon became clear that we should also consider algorithm selection. And to do algorithm selection, we needed the features and the fitness landscape analysis. So it kind of, when the first tool that we decided to use became clear, it also started to clarify the overall goals of my PhD. And it was quite late in my PhD that I got familiarized with the idea of meta-learning that is being done in the machine learning. So that is because there are, of course, several machine learning algorithms. The task is the same, that how the which machine learning algorithm should be used and how its parameters should be set. And they talk about meta-learning. And this kind of concept that combines algorithm selection, hyperheuristics, automatic algorithm configuration for optimization, it doesn't really exist. There has been some scholars who have used the meta-optimization, and despite meta being this kind of squishy name for things, I really like the idea because it's optimization, but on the meta level, optimization of the optimization algorithms. So this kind of clarification, what is the, what are the tools and what's the umbrella that gathers them in the one solid theoretical framework, kind of solidified during my PhD.
I had also kept note of a question, but you almost already answer, and this is about which is the result you are most proud of. Mm-hmm. I guess you already answered. Maybe it's not my guess is not the correct one.
Perhaps the fact that the result is so coherent that I could quite extensively answer the questions regarding the customization of the vehicle routing solver component inside the vehicle routing system. I think my dissertation already answers the most relevant questions in that quite well. So perhaps that's the, it's not any specific thing, but kind of that it's
methodology.
It's the whole, and it's not this kind of fragmented, as it may sometimes happen when you do a collection of papers type of thesis. But in fact, there's this unified story that, and that can be told about my journey. And that is perhaps the one that I'm most proud of.
Yeah, so then also this comes to my next question. Your answer inspired me in a further question. So to what extent what you did can be generalized or moved to other kind of problems? Do you see or do you recommend some specific things to be warned about in the process or?
Yeah, and it's a good question and a good observation because, as I said, I'm most proud of this synthesis of these different topics that are being covered in my PhD, and at this around the same time that the paper number one that describes the framework and the workflow was published, there was a paper from Della Banda et al. who described how optimization, the future of optimization technology, especially regarding constraint programming. And the ideas in that paper are really close, or they didn't offer solutions, they described the problems. The problems are really similar to those that I tackled. And what I have been able to provide are practical tools, even open source tools that can be used to build the next generation computational and optimization solvers. So I think there's a definite possibility that that the topics can generalize to different fields. And I hope that different researchers of different fields are able to find my research and perhaps consider that meta-optimization point of view.
Yeah, this sounds very interesting, and also it would be interesting to have a sort of interdisciplinary approach to this meta-optimization, because it's common on of several research fields. Maybe they tackle it with similar tools, but there is not so much communication between the fields, which is something which that makes the progress a bit hard. So the progress of the overall science a bit harder, I have to say. Yeah. So
as it said in I don't remember if it was Dijkstra or someone, giant of the computer science, said that there's only three major problems in computer science. Three major problems in computer science, and those were naming things. Please help me, audience. Naming things off by one errors, and kind of giving good names for phenomena or topics like meta optimization might help these different fields to kind of see the similarities between their approaches. So that is at least what I hope.
So going toward the conclusions, based on your findings, what areas will you suggest for future research? So from this, your research, where can go?
Yeah, perhaps the most natural direction would be to expand the existing research to cover also selection of metaheuristics. Just a really practical future research topic. And also to cover the richer, more realistic multi-attribute variants of vehicle routing problems. Those are definitely something that, that should be considered in the future. Also, that would require novel ways to describe those other variants, how to describe, for example, the different constraints that exist in real-world routing. But regarding moving on from the algorithms and the solvers, one of the major barriers for the deployment of optimization technology are the data integration and migration and data quality concerns. And any tools that could help in there, I think, would be immensely valuable. And in that, I think the research done by Kalmbach and others on join inference and schema matching and so on would be really relevant in tackling these problems. So automating the data integration, I think, would be the most beneficial, if not the hardest thing to do to tackle next.
And how do you plan to spread your word? Would you say, how do you think you can contribute also disseminating such a view to the community, which indeed I perfectly agree with what you said about methodological issues and everything. So what can you do in this respect?
I don't know. It's a difficult question, how to sell your ideas.
Yeah.
And I think I really like the open source movement, because in there there's this year large significance in the value that one can provide to other. So I think that by building useful tools that are really readily and easily available, some ideas can spread quite quickly. So perhaps that is the most efficient way for me to propagate these ideas. But of course, it requires work, but it's something that I think is really important for not only for the technology, but for all people, all humans, that we can share the ideas and freely build on top of them. And open source provides good tools for that.
Okay, and my last question is leaves the word to you. Do you have any closing comments or something you would add to our discussion up to now?
It's difficult. Of course, I should use this opportunity to thank my supervisors, first of all, and all the co-authors who have helped me and written the papers to some length together and helped me with the with many little details that are always present in the academic work. So I'm really grateful for your help. And perhaps that is what I have to say.
Okay. The body of work done by the candidate and reported in the thesis is a rigorous and meticulous attempt to advance the state of the art in the field of automatic algorithm configuration and customization applied to routing problem. The amount of work is impressive and it's being also appreciated by external examiners besides myself.
Moreover, the discussion that took place here has been scientifically enjoyable and very fruitful, at least for my side. With pleasure, I will recommend to the Faculty of Information Technology to approve the candidate's dissertation.
After this, I salute those people who have some critical comments regarding my thesis to ask an address from the Kostos.
The public examination has been concluded.
Okay, and tuossa käytävällä on tarjolla kahvia, there's coffee on the, in the hallway, and you are welcome to join us with coffee and some refreshments.